This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Today on our show, we're talking to the mayors of two central Florida cities riding a wave of change. We're going to start with Kissimmee. It's a city with two big neighbors, Orlando and Walt Disney World. And population growth is transforming Kissimmee and sparking new development. Mayor Jim Swan is in his last year leading the city. I met him at Kissimmee City Hall, a few blocks from Lake Toho.
So Kissimmee is, you know, it's next-door neighbours with Orlando. You've got Disney on your doorstep. Its population's growing pretty fast. I mean, Census Bureau data puts its growth rate at nearly 12% between 2010 and 2014. Jim Swan, is the city suffering from some growing pains?
Well, I think anybody would say yes to that question. I think, though, we have done far better than many cities. Whenever things were really bad from an economic standpoint, we were prepared for it. We took proactive actions to reduce our workforce so we didn't have to raise taxes. We didn't have to lay off a bunch of people. And not every other community in Central Florida was that smart or that lucky to move forward quickly.
Mm-hmm. How do you see the city's identity? Is this the gateway to the theme parks, or is it something much more than that?
I think we've become very much an international kind of a community, and we have. When I moved here in 1972, we did not have a McDonald's, if that gives you any idea of the amount of change that's occurred. But I think we're changing daily as it relates to the demographics. I'm not too keen on learning Spanish, but it would be a great asset for me because I can communicate better with many of our citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the city is moving forward in every direction. We lay out a plan that is a five-year plan in our budgeting process. We go through a process each January of determining, the commission determines what the priorities are going to be for that next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the staff then is responsible for implementing those policies.
Jim Swan, you mentioned the fact that Spanish is becoming more commonly spoken in Kissimmee now.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that's the biggest difference you've seen as far as the demographic change in Kissimmee?
Without a doubt. I mean, when I moved here, this was a pure country town. I mean, the main product that was available were cattle.
And you've still got that rodeo symbol over
the
downtown.
We do, and we're very proud of that. And it's something that I particularly don't ever want to forget where this community has come from. We have families that have been born here year after year that have been here since the 1800s. And some of those family members I'm lucky enough to know. And there's a lot of new folks who have moved here that I haven't had a chance to meet yet. And maybe they don't speak English, and I don't speak Spanish. But to me, the key is, am I providing an equal level of service to each and every citizen that we have in this community? And I believe this city breaks its neck trying to do that every day. I made a few comments at our employee Christmas party this year about how proud I was to have had the opportunity to serve as this mayor with an army of wonderful employees, and I mean we have them. And they are very, very committed to making this community better, and they work every day to try to make that happen.
Talking about the growth in Kissimmee, what other big differences have you seen as far as, you know, having an influx of people come in, a growing population? What differences has that made to the city?
It's kind of hard to respond to. Other than what I've already suggested, we got a lot of people driving around that don't know how to drive. Do you have any of that in Orange County? I bet you do.
I think it's pandemic in Florida. Right?
Well, whatever.
So that's kind of a spinoff of the tourism industry.
Kind of. That's one of the challenges from the tourism industry.
Mm-hmm. How important are those theme parks as far as the identity, though, of Kissimmee? I mean, how big a part of the city's?
I don't know that they create the identity of our community. I think they are a part of it. And I think more importantly than anything else is there is an enormous number of jobs that are out there,
mm-hmm,
that our citizens make use of. That's how they feed their families. So only a fool would not favor, you know, supporting the tourism industry.
Mm-hmm.
It means too much.
There are challenges that Kissimmee faces, though, as a lot of towns and cities do across Florida. And Osceola County, when you look at things like homelessness, wages, those are two challenges. If you look at census data, it's about 23% of residents below the poverty level between 2009-2013, which is lower than the federal rate, and also median household income a bit lower than that, to $35,000 in Kissimmee. What can you, or I guess the next mayor of Kissimmee, do to try and change the equation there?
I don't know that you can do anything by yourself. You can make noise by yourself, but whether or not you can accomplish anything is a different story. We recognize we've got homeless issues to try to deal with, mm-hmm. and frankly, very quietly, our staff has been working on this homeless issue a lot longer than the media has paid any attention to it. So, we are probably a little further along than many would realize. We don't typically go out and seek attention from the media. So therefore, the media really doesn't know what we do down here for the most part, and that's okay with me. I think what's important is to address long-term problems and challenges in a very methodical, careful, cautious way. If you don't, you end up with egg on your face.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way we try to do business here.
When you look at issues like homelessness, what kind of things have you seen that your staff have been able to do to get things moving there?
To get into the specifics, I'm not going to even try.
But as you say, there are big problems, big challenges, big opportunities, big challenges.
Well, and go back to try to address your question more directly. We know and have known for many, many years that our average household income is well below what we'd like it to be. And we have been working with the county and with other regional partners to try to create and bring into our community more high-paying jobs mm-hmm. than ever before. There's a little project that's right on the city limits called ICOMAR. I don't know if you've heard of it yet, but it's going to create, once it's up and going, an awful lot of very good-paying jobs, and it will probably bring a higher level of education or educated employees into our community, into our workforce. So, I feel really good about that. And in addition, in the healthcare side of it, we've got two great hospitals. Mm-hmm. Both of them have just finished major renovations and additions. And so we have new jobs, and those are all higher paying jobs than what the average is. We have those expanding all the time. And we got to continue to focus on doing that.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about bringing new opportunities to Kissimmee, and you mentioned the transportation piece of the picture, just having more people on the roads, but you've also got some exciting things coming in terms of rail, right? Talk to me about how SunRail is going to change things here.
Oh, it's going to create a phenomenal change, I think. And I think it's not fair just to talk about SunRail as it relates to Kissimmee. I think you have to look at the entirety of Osceola County, because there are like 70,000 people who live in Poinciana who drive through the city of Kissimmee going back and forth to work each day. And if they can get on a train down there and they don't have to get behind a wheel, that relieves a lot of the tension and pressure on our roadway network. And I think you're going to see a lot of that. I think you're going to see over the next 10 years a significant increase in bus transportation. We have to do those things. We cannot afford to build roads and get out of the mess we're in. And I'm currently the chairman of Metro Plan Orlando for another 3 or 4 weeks. That's something that we as a body up there have come to grips with. Hey, look, roads aren't going to work anymore, and so we've got to create other opportunities. It might be riding a bicycle. It might be walking. It might be renting or on roller skates. But we have to create other opportunities for people to get from where they are to where they need to be.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. We're talking to Kissimmee Mayor Jim Swan. Jim Swan, part of the transportation or transit-oriented design piece is having people able to live close to a mode of transportation, be it rail or bus rapid transit, and then commute. So how is that going to, what will that do, you know, once you get some apartments going up near the train station here, as far as getting people from here to Orlando and vice versa?
Well, I think the younger generation, your age, has a great deal more flexibility in their minds as to where they'd like to be. And I don't think they like sitting in a car. And if I had to get up in the morning and drive to downtown Orlando to go to work and then fight the traffic to come home, and suddenly there was an opportunity for me to live right next to SunRail or two blocks from SunRail, and I could do that same thing in a 10-20 minute ride, you know, on SunRail, I'd be doing that in a heartbeat. Now, I'm a little stuck in my old ways. I'm not in y'all's age, you know, kind of category, but that's something that I think will change the face of this county and this city. You're going to have a major hub up on by Tupperware. You're going to have one here, and you're going to have one down in Poinciana. And anybody who has been heavily involved in the financing and all the decision-making in SunRail has said that they anticipate a significantly greater ridership from Osceola County than they're getting up in Orange County and in Seminole County. And I believe that's true. I just believe that we have the right people living in our community who will take advantage of that.
So tell me a little bit about that development near the station and some of the other developments you've got going on downtown or in planning.
Well, the one thing that I and every member of our city family is very, very proud of, and you can't see it on radio, but we really believe we have one, if not the finest park anywhere in Florida, and it's located right down on our lakefront. And any day of the week, you're going to see hundreds down there playing and kids running and going back and forth in that park. We have major events down there that are attended by 10, 12,000 people on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's become a very, very, very popular place. And we are in this upcoming budget, we're going to have phase four of that project done. Or funded, I shouldn't say done, but it'll be funded in this, it's already funded in this budget. So that will be under construction in the next few months, and it'll take about another year for the actual construction to be completed. But, you know, we used to have a 100-year-old power plant down here at the lakefront, which is now gone, and you'll see a development occur there, and we had a whole lot of other things in our immediate downtown area through the CRA that's been funded over the years. And all of those are going to benefit us in the long run.
As far as the lake goes, I mean, there have been some problems with the health of the lake too, right? Lake Toho, and there have been efforts to clean that up. How's that going?
Well, now you're getting into something that could take me a long time to answer. I used to be a fishing guide. I took people fishing for a living on this lake. And back in the late 70s and early 80s, a Game Commission biologist said that the lake was going to die if you didn't stop dumping treated sewage effluent into it. And at the time that report was done, there was 28 million gallons of treated sewage effluent coming from Orange County and Orlando into our lake. Long story short, we went through an extended battle over that issue. Orange County was very quickly convinced to do the right thing, and they did as fast as they could. City of Orlando took a little longer, so they ended up in a building moratorium for a year or so. Long story short, though, is all that water that used to be dumped into the lakes is now being reused in some fashion. And of all the things I've been involved in, I'm probably as proud of that because I led that effort.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably as proud of that as anything else I've ever done, because that really what we did here changed the way that sewage effluent is handled from one end of this state to the other. And to me, that's very meaningful, because we're not withdrawing water from the aquifer to take care of your citrus trees anymore. That's being taken care of by the treated effluent that comes from sewer plants. And perfect. You could drink it if you wanted to. Now, nobody will because of the thought process behind it, but it's really, really a phenomenal resource to have at your disposal. But long story short, getting back to your initial question, the most recent studies and analyses that I've seen shows that the water quality has improved dramatically over the last 25 to 30 years from what it was in the early 80s to now. It is in very good condition. The biggest problem they have right now in the lake is hydrilla.
Right, and that's an invasive weed.
It is. And people came from other parts of the world and bought a tank and put fish in it and threw a piece of hydrilla in there, and now we've got it from one end of the country to the other, and it's doing horrible damage. The state has done, I think, in the last year or two, a much better job in trying to control it. They're spraying it, and if you don't do that, then it will become impassable. You won't be able to get a boat from one end of it to the other.
Just coming back to the image, changing image perhaps of Kissimmee, what are your ideas about preserving some of that rural heritage? You've got the rodeo, things like that. You mentioned the citrus industry, which obviously isn't the same now as it would have been 20, 30 years ago, but can you preserve elements of that, traditional rural heritage as Kissimmee moves forward?
Oh, I think so. And I think we have to. I mean, I would hate to live here if we didn't figure out ways to, one, preserve the heritage that's here, and also to, two, try to incorporate our new residents that have moved here. And if you don't do that, I think you're just making life miserable for everybody. History is important.
Mm-hmm. What's your advice for the next mayor of Kissimmee?
Say a lot of prayers. Be honest. Be straightforward with people. Don't tap dance. I've never been known to be overly fearful of telling it like it is. And I think a lot of people don't like it, but they respect you. And I think the fact that I have been elected on 6 different occasions, maybe people respect that, even if I have to tell them no, or if I disagree with them, at least they know where I stand, and they don't have to worry about me changing my mind. And if I do change my mind, I'll call them and tell them, and I've done that too. If you learn new information from the time you talk to somebody that would cause you to think differently about an issue, then you should show them the respect to at least call and tell them. Don't blindside people. It's not right.
Would you run for another term?
Nope.
If you could?
Nope. I'm done. Shortly after my term ends, I will be 69 years old, and I have a granddaughter that is 6 and a daughter that is almost 40, and I wouldn't mind spending a little more time with them. My daughter currently has my boat, but I think she would let me borrow it if I'd like, and I will be probably doing some fishing.
Jim Swan is the mayor of Kissimmee. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. Still to come, the mayor of Titusville talks to us about how a new space industry is helping to revitalize the city. And later in the program, we preview the governor's State of the State address. Intersection returns in a minute. Welcome back to Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Titusville was once a city tied to NASA's shuttle program. When space industry jobs disappeared after the end of that program, Titusville was forced to reassess. But now Mayor Jim Tully says the city's bouncing back with new commercial space and aviation businesses setting up shop. Well, James Tully is the mayor of Titusville. He's been mayor of the city since 2008. He joins us by phone. Welcome to Intersection.
You're quite welcome.
Well, paint me a picture of Titusville, Mayor Tully. The city was hit quite hard by the end of the space shuttle program a couple of years back, but the economy is picking up again now. So what kind of shape is the city in?
We're back. There's no doubt about it. We're all sorts of activity is going on, and I'm particularly excited about 4 things in particular. First of all the new business activity. We've got space companies coming in, Lockheed Martin and Blue Origin. We've got Embraer, the aircraft manufacturer is going to be building a seating manufacturing facility up here. Mm-hmm. We've got Flag Logistics building a huge logistics center right on US 1 in South Titusville. We've got a liquid natural gas processing facility coming in. Our old mall is being brought back to life as Titus Landings. We've got a company called Paragon Plastics, and the Playlinda pub downtown is building a brewery. And there's an aircraft manufacturing company down in at our airport. They've been there a couple of years, but they're starting to see movement with contracts. So the new business activity is going to bring lots of jobs. And it was very important for us to do that because we wanted to get out of the mode where we were basically a NASA company town.
Right.
And so the economy has diversified beautifully. And if there are future downturns in space, which I'm not anticipating, because with the prospect of commercial space, I think they will fly more frequently, they'll learn faster, and they'll do a lot more interesting and different things. And so we need not be too concerned about that, but you never know. And if it were to happen, we're diversified enough that shouldn't be a problem in the future. And, of course, speaking of commercial space, that's the second thing I'm really excited about. If you happened to watch the news last week and saw SpaceX make that vertical landing, mm-hmm. bringing one of their rockets back, that just changes the whole space equation. And they'll be saving millions and millions of dollars by doing that sort of thing. Blue Origin did the same thing on a test flight,
right?
Whereas SpaceX's was an actual commercial flight, resupply flight to the space station. So the prospects of what those two companies alone can do is just breathtaking. And Blue Origin is going to be building rockets right here, which is really a first for the Space Coast. We have been for 40 years basically just a launch operations facility. But to have space manufacturing here is just incredible for us. And then, of course, there's the trails. I am just so excited about these bicycle trails that are going in. In fact, if you wander around town, you can see construction is going on mm-hmm. already. We're going to have a beautiful bicycle pedestrian bridge going across Garden Street, which is our northern east-west route that comes in from the interstate and goes out to the wildlife refuge. And they've already started constructing that. But the prospect of having a bicycle trail that runs from St. Petersburg to Titusville and then on out to the Canaveral National Seashore is just going to bring all sorts of tourist activity to Titusville. And then there's a second trail, the St. John's River to the Sea Loop Trail, which Titusville is sort of like the southern keystone of that trail. And it goes up through Palatka and St. Augustine, Daytona Beach, New Smyrna Beach, and then back. And it actually is going to run through our wildlife refuge, so people going on that trail will be able to ride through the wildlife refuge, which was a real coup for us to be able to get that included because it wasn't in the original route. Mm-hmm. So the prospects for ecotourism are just incredible. And then as a result of all this, the economy picking back up and the housing market picking back up, we've got some additional revenues coming in, and so there's a lot of beautification things going on. Our Hopkins Avenue is going to be redone as a complete street. We've got Main Street streetscape going in. They're already started on a beautiful stormwater park up at what used to be the old high school football stadium called Dre Field. We're in the process of raising money for a splash park. And the city is going to be building a downtown welcome center right in the downtown so we can welcome all these new folks that are coming into Titusville. So I'm just excited about everything that's going on. It's been a long 8 years, but I'm very, very thankful that we've accomplished all we have as a city, and certainly in concert with the county. It's been a real team effort, and lots of people have worked really hard on getting all these things done. And so I think that when I leave office in a year, my successor will be in much, much better shape than I was in when I first came into office 7 years ago.
Jim Tully, so you've been in office, as you say, for coming up on 8 years now. And I just want to go back to a point you made about Titusville, the Space Coast, basically being a launch operations facility and now kind of transitioning to something new. I mean, you came from a space background yourself. So what's it been like?
Right. I spent 25 years out there. So,
So what's it been like sort of watching that change? You know, coming from that industry, seeing the pretty profound transformation going on there?
Oh, it's incredible. It's just, I mean, I've been a space nut my whole life. I even put in an application to be an astronaut at one time, but those are pretty special people, and I didn't quite make the cut. So.
When was that?
But it was probably 20 years ago when I was quite a bit younger while I was still working out there. I put in a couple of applications. But,
I imagine the competition is pretty stiff for those positions too.
Oh, it's incredibly stiff. So, but that's okay. You know, I still had a great time working out there for 25 years, and I'm old enough to remember when Sputnik went up, mm-hmm. and old enough to remember our very first rocket launch with Alan Shepard. So, and I've been watching it ever since, and I was really fortunate to be able to work out there for 25 years.
As far as, you know, what else is going on, you mentioned some of the, you know, you listed some of the other businesses that are going on. Not all of them aerospace related, but you do have quite a bit of aerospace going on. Embraer, as you say. And a lot of that's happening at Space Commerce Park. How important is that park, that Commerce Park, for the future of Titusville?
Well, it's very important. Embraer, they're moving into that park, and Paragon Plastics is moving into that park. That park is owned by the county, and it's been for the most part laying empty for many, many years. And, you know, when I first got to Titusville in 1985, that was prior to the first shuttle accident, and NASA was still pitching the possibility, or the what they hoped they were going to do was basically launch a shuttle every month. Mm-hmm. And after that first accident, they kind of reality set in, and they realized that they weren't really going to be able to do that. But prior to that accident, everybody here in Titusville was just really excited about the space program and what was going to go on with the shuttle, and the prospect of that many launches once a month had lots of companies looking to come in here. And so that park out there was going to be very important for all these companies coming in. And then, as I said, after that first accident, reality set in. But now, with commercial space, we're back to that point again where we recognize with the kinds of things that SpaceX has already done, the prospect of lots of launches, and with the prospect of spacecraft manufacturing here, both from Blue Origin and Boeing is building their space capsule now out at the Space Center, and KSC is building the NASA capsule out there. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole different dimension for space here, and I think people are once again every bit as excited as they were back in the early 80s when the shuttle was really just getting started.
When you tell people about Titusville, though, when you tell the story of Titusville, do you have to run against the current a little bit as far as, do people still see it as the place where once there was the shuttle program? Do you have to kind of turn that narrative around still?
There was a certain amount of I don't know, perception out there that because the shuttle had ended, the space program had shut down. And, of course, that was never the case. They've been doing launches ever since, but
right.
The launch rate has actually picked up within the last year. And so there were more launches in 2015 than there were in 2014, and there will be more launches, as I understand it, in 2016 than there were in 2015. So as the launch rate picks up, we're actually going to be seeing more launches more frequently than we were seeing during the shuttle era.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. We're talking to the mayor of Titusville, Jim Tully. Jim Tully, one thing I'm interested in asking you about too is we've seen some transformation going on in some other coastal cities in Central Florida. Daytona Beach would be an example of that, a sort of rebranding, a reimagining of what that city is. Is there something similar happening in Titusville?
I think so. We're a very unusual community in that we are surrounded by a lot of public land. We've got the Space Center, the Wildlife Refuge, and the National Seashore to our east. We've got another wildlife refuge to our west. So I tell people that instead of thinking of ourselves as a city next to a wildlife refuge, we should think of ourselves as the residential portion of the wildlife refuge, mm-hmm. so that we maintain this park-like vista throughout our city. I drove one of our county commissioners from the south around a few months ago, and he was quite amazed, as many people are, that you can drive around Titusville and see all this green space mm-hmm. within the city limits. So we're very unusual in that regard, and we are also the only city in the entire county that does not have an abutting municipal neighbor. That is, in every other city in Brevard County, there's some place along the county line, the city boundary, where you can walk across that boundary into another city, and that's
right.
not true in Titusville.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also the only city that actually abuts the Space Center. So we have a lot of things going for us up here that's different than the cities in the rest of the county, or probably even the rest of the state. And so we certainly want to take full benefit from that, from our difference, and be a unique place and not a place just like every place else.
Mm-hmm. What about the port? What's going on there, and what changes could you see there, and how could that affect the city,
well,
too?
Those changes have already started. I mentioned that Flag Logistics is building a huge logistics center,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to be part of what they're calling an inland port, where since they don't have a rail line that goes directly to the port and probably won't have one for years, they're using the fact that Titusville is right on the north-south Florida East Coast rail line to build this gigantic logistics center. And they've got the first building is already substantially complete, and they've had so much success in attracting business to that facility, they're actually planning to move on to phase two, as I understand it, and,
mm-hmm.
and build even more logistics space there. So, and that's all being driven by the port getting into the cargo business. So that's going to be huge for us also.
Is there any kind of conflict, though, when you talk about, you know, big changes like that, sort of an industrial size changes when you're talking about a port, possible rail connections, that kind of thing? And then, as you say, you've got this wildlife refuge, a lot of green space. Is there conflict between balancing out those two interests?
Well, some of us went to a training session a few years ago called Balancing Nature and Commerce,
mm-hmm.
and we took a lot of what we learned there to heart, and we're very fortunate in the way the city is laid out, in that our airport, which is kind of the center of the commerce part of our city, is way down at the southern end of the city. So if you come in off 95 off of State Road 405 and Highway 50, everything that is really industrial related is down surrounding the airport. That's where the industrial, we've got actually got two industrial parks down there.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the west side of the airport. We've got a giant armaments manufacturing facility called Knight Armament that's down there right adjacent to the airport property. All sorts of interesting things going on at the airport itself. And then, for example, the liquefied natural gas facility is right adjacent to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
The logistics center is adjacent to the airport. So all of the commercial, industrial kind of activity, or most of it, is being generated down in that part of town. Whereas if you come in the north exit off 95, you come in Garden Street, and that leads right to the wildlife refuge. So most of our natural kinds of things that are going to attract those ecotourists are up on the north side of town, and then you've got all of the residential development kind of in the middle. And so I don't see any kind of contradiction or any kind of conflict between the two kinds of development.
Mm-hmm.
We, a few years ago, changed our city motto to Gateway to Nature and Space, and I think that pretty much says it all about what Titusville is all about. We're a multiple gateway. We'll always have space as an important part of our community. It's sort of in our DNA after 50 years of having that space program right across the, mm-hmm. across the river, and then all the natural environment that comes with the wildlife refuges and the National Seashore. So it seems to all be working for us.
When you were talking before about, you know, reflecting back on your term as mayor, you said that the city is in better shape now than it was when you stepped into office some coming up on 8 years ago. Are you kind of reluctant to be leaving the mayor's seat now when so many new good things are going on?
Oh, not at all. I've always believed that our democratic form of government is not served best by having people hang out too long. And I've said that repeatedly when people have asked me why I'm not running. I have always said that George Washington set the standard. You know, it's always best to have new people coming in with fresh ideas and new things to think about. And none of us are indispensable. And I've enjoyed my time as mayor. I will look back on it with and treasure the 8 years. And plus the 4 years prior to that, I was on the city council.
Mm-hmm.
So 12 years is a lot of time to give to any community. But it's, I mean, I don't need it as part of my ego to be the mayor. It's been a wonderful ride. I've enjoyed it, but I'm ready to move on and do some other things and let somebody else have a turn at the helm.
What do you think the biggest challenges are going to be for your successor?
I think just maintaining the momentum. I mean, we've got a lot of momentum going here, and that will be not a huge challenge because the momentum has started. I think the biggest challenge will be not spoiling it. I talk to newcomers all the time, and almost without exception, they'll say to me, boy, we've never been here before, but we love this place. We just moved here. We love this place. And you just don't realize, if you've been here for a long time, you may not realize what a treasure you have here. And we don't want to be, or at least I don't think Titusville should try to become like the other cities in Brevard County. We should try to maintain this kind of low-key uniqueness that incorporates our devotion to the space, but also our devotion to nature and the wildlife refuge and the Indian River Lagoon, and keep it a special place and not a place that looks like any other place in Brevard County. And I guess the third challenge is going to be that Indian River Lagoon.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of money is going to have to be spent on that. But that's not just Titusville. That's, you know, up multiple counties, not just cities up and down the lagoon.
Right. That's a very long stretch of water.
And that's going to be a huge challenge, too, because that body of water is really the lifeblood of a lot of the communities up and down the East Coast here.
Have you seen a lot of change as far as the health of the lagoon since you took office?
Well, I don't spend as much time on the water as I used to, which is one of the things I'm looking forward to when I'm no longer mayor, to have the time to get out there on a kayak and spend more time out there. So I only really get it by hearsay. But but the people you talk to who spend a lot of time on the water and who know the lagoon, they tell the story that it really has deteriorated a lot over the last 20 to 40 years. Mm-hmm. But we've got to bring it back. There really isn't any choice. But that's probably true in a lot of the waters of the state. There are other bodies of water around Florida that need help too. But, of course, we're right on the Indian River Lagoon, and that's our focus.
Mm-hmm. What else are you going to be doing aside from more kayaking once you step down?
Well, I'm not sure. I think I'd like to maybe write a book, not about being mayor, but I have some thoughts of some things I'd like to do, a lot of reading, a lot of writing, and I've got grandchildren that live in California and Virginia, so I'd like to do a little bit more traveling and see my grandchildren. So I'll stay busy. I'm not going to sit around on the couch and do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Jim Tully is the mayor of Titusville. This is his last year as mayor of that city. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. Still to come, Florida Governor Rick Scott will deliver his annual State of the State speech at the start of the legislative session later this morning. He'll preview the State of the State with WFSU's Lynn Hatter. Intersection continues in a minute. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. Governor Rick Scott is campaigning for a big tax cut this year, and later in the morning he'll outline his vision for Florida as he delivers his State of the State address to the legislature. For a preview of what we can expect from the governor in his address, we're joined by Lynn Hatter. She's the news director for WFSU in Tallahassee. Welcome to Intersection.
Thank you guys for having me.
Lynn, let's start with what Governor Scott is asking for this year. He's been focused on jobs and more tax breaks, and tax breaks have been a theme of previous State of the State addresses. So how much emphasis are you anticipating Governor Rick Scott will put on his billion-dollar tax cut bid this time around?
Well, Governor Rick Scott really wants that, and he definitely wants a permanent end to the manufacturing tax here in Florida. He has not made that one of his top priorities, and he is going back to ask the legislature to permanently end that tax. So far, lawmakers have sort of paused it, but the governor really wants to get rid of it altogether. But his really big policy is $250 million for the state's public-private business recruitment arm, Enterprise Florida. He has been pushing the legislature to give that money. He has gotten local mayors to sign off on it. He has gotten fellow lawmakers to sign off on it. $250 million for that program. The governor says it'll create an awful lot of jobs and really help toward recruiting more businesses to Florida. So look out for that money to be part of his main ask.
As you say, Lynn Hatter, jobs have been a key focus of Scott's speeches and so forth for some time. He's really been campaigning hard on that. He did during his re-election campaign, and he's been continuing that since he was re-elected. Enterprise Florida, though, is that a departure for him, stressing this aspect as well?
It's not really a departure. The governor really relies on Enterprise Florida. What that program does is offer tax incentives to businesses to come to the state. Some lawmakers have been kind of critical of it because they say, you know, these businesses promised us 500 jobs, they only created 50. So in return for the $250 million, some lawmakers are saying, well, you need to make these businesses actually create the jobs that they've promised. So there have been a series of sort of reforms put forward by the governor to make Enterprise Florida a little bit more accountable for how it's using the money and who it's giving that money to. But as far as a big departure, it really goes hand in hand with the governor's constant theme of jobs.
Mm-hmm. Are you expecting then something in the way of a bit of pushback from some lawmakers to this theme of his speech?
Not necessarily pushback. There have been some concerns raised by lawmakers about, you know, Enterprise Florida has money. Technically, it does. It has some money in a trust fund because it gives businesses the money sort of in a rolling form when they hit certain benchmarks. But Enterprise Florida has claimed, you know, that money is already reserved, so they want this portion too. How much the legislature is actually going to be able to put forward toward that goal, though, is a matter of the budget. You have to balance this budget. Obviously, you can't really borrow to do certain things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have the $250 million ask for Enterprise Florida. You've got the $1 billion worth of tax cuts, and that has to be balanced with the usual state stuff. Education, healthcare, criminal justice. Mm-hmm. And we already know that there are already some issues popping up in the healthcare portion of the budget that could really put a dent in some of these other programs and policies that the governor wants.
So the governor may be setting the bar fairly high and might have another target in mind to come down to.
He might have to come down a little bit in order to get this budget situation ironed out. Like I said, healthcare is really poking some holes this year, just as it did last year.
Mm-hmm. Lynn Howard, a part of what held things up politically last year was that debate over healthcare, Medicaid expansion specifically. Do you anticipate Governor Scott talking much about healthcare in his State of the State?
He may mention it. He has really been adamant this year that we have to get control of this healthcare budget, and he's really been pushing for price transparency in hospitals. You've really seen him going after hospitals, the hospitals would say unfairly, about this issue of price transparency and knowing what things cost.
Mm-hmm.
He has accused the hospitals of price gouging their patients through balanced billing. That's when you have health insurance, you go to the hospital, and lo, you come out with a bill.
Right.
The governor says, you know, we can't do that anymore. So he is pushing for lawmakers to pass a bill that would put penalties on hospitals for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you've got two lawmakers that are coming out with a bill sort of to address the issue of balanced billing in healthcare. So you're going to have that moving. But all of this has been fueled by, you know, the state is spending 20-some-odd billion dollars on health care. It is the biggest part of Florida's budget now. And the legislature has struggled to control costs in that program. Last year, the big fight was over, should we expand Medicaid and take the federal money? That didn't happen. But at the same time, as the health care budget is growing, we're losing some federal money that props up that budget.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that those dollars are going to have to be made up somehow. The question is, how are we going to do it? Now you see the emergence of, in addition to the balanced billing issues, you've got proposals for nurses. You've got proposals that would let people pay doctors directly for care. You've got the emergence of alternatives to emergency rooms that are coming up. All of those are part of this. How do we get control of that 20-some-odd billion dollar portion of the healthcare budget?
As you say, Lynn Hatter, there's some expensive things that the governor has to wrap his mind around for 2016 and beyond. And at the same time, he's calling for that big tax cut. There are also some sources of revenue too. And one of the things he's been talking about leading up to this legislative session has been the Seminole Compact, that deal with the Seminole tribe, renewing that deal. How much of the speech are you expecting him to dedicate to that issue?
I don't expect him to dedicate much of that speech to the issue of the Seminole Gaming Compact. This deal, it's worth $3 billion, but the legislature is probably not going to be writing that money into the state budget this year. It has to sign off on this gambling compact, and so far there are a lot of lawmakers who just aren't quite there yet. You have a lot of lawmakers, especially in Central and South Florida, who are opposed to some of the issues that are inside of this gaming compact. You've got lawmakers who don't want to see even more casinos pop up in the state. You've got other lawmakers who say, you know, these communities were promised highlights and racetracks, greyhound racing, horse tracks. To decouple them from slot machines would create a bunch of little mini casinos. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this compact is definitely not a done deal. I've heard talk that, you know, we could have a special session just to deal with it alone. But when it comes to, you know, what role the compact is going to play in budget negotiations, it might not play as big a role as a lot of people would think.
I imagine that any talk of any kind of special session after what happened last year with lawmakers being called back so many times must give lawmakers a bit of a scare this time around too.
Well, it could, but they have really worked recently to kind of put 2015 behind them and to attempt to start from scratch. So if there is a deal, you know, or if there is a special session, and I'm not saying that there will be, it is just a rumor, you know, people have talked about it, I don't think it would be as contentious as it was last year. You know, last year was very unique in that the House really dug its heels into this issue of expanding Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And so did the Senate. The Senate really wanted the Medicaid expansion. The House was just adamantly opposed. And that coupled with what we later found out would be millions and millions of millions of dollars lost in this LIP funding really put the pressure onto the state. And so we saw that pressure basically lead to the crack toward the end of session, the session mm-hmm. meltdown. There won't be that pressure. Now the Florida legislature, you know, for better or worse, pretty much knows what the financial outlook is going to be. They know how much money that they're going to get. So it's a different environment. They have most of redistricting, another thing that really divided lawmakers. All of that is behind them. And now is really about just kind of finishing up on all of the issues that were important last year but just didn't make it through because the session disintegrated.
Mm-hmm. Lynn Hatter, there was some bad blood, not only between the two chambers in the legislature last year, but also between Governor Scott and lawmakers, the governor vetoing some $460 million in spending as part of that. Is this state of the state address, though, the start of the legislative session, is that a chance to reset that relationship between the governor and lawmakers?
It could be. The governor has often used his state of the state to really talk about what his priorities are. Sometimes those priorities align with what lawmakers feel are priorities, and then sometimes they don't. But as far as a reset, you know, when it comes to economic policy, the governor and the legislature do pretty much march hand in hand. So again, last year was really fueled by some pretty big differences in healthcare policy. A lot of those fights are behind them. This legislative session, you know, they want to get out of here. They want to go campaign. It's an election year. Nobody wants to be sitting around Tallahassee. So I don't think you're going to see as many of those fights this year as you saw last year.
Lynn Hatter is the news director with WFSU in Tallahassee. She joined us from Tallahassee. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
And you can hear the governor's speech live on 90.7 News from 11 this morning and analysis from our roundtable of political commentators. Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. The executive producer is Catherine Welch. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.